Karen Yankovich, and you're listening to The Chris Cerone Show.
Episode 17.
You're listening to The Chris Cerone Show. Inspiring interviews with entrepreneurs and awesome people that will motivate you to take action now.
Now,
your host, Chris Cerone.
Hello, hope you are excited for the weekend, for today, for the show that you're about to hear. I'm actually going to be releasing a bonus episode this weekend, so look out for it. I have a lot of stuff to share with you guys, a lot of stuff that I've been wanting to talk about, but because I've had a lot of guests on, I haven't really been able to do it. Well, this weekend is going to be the perfect time for you to hear it, because on the 12th of this month, it marked exactly 1 month since I started my show, and I ended up with just a hair under 14,000 downloads. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, that is just absolutely amazing. I am just so grateful, and I'm going to really share with you guys how I did it. Now, my next guest, find his show notes on CeroneShow.com/17, and here's why you're going to want to do it. Not only is he a well-known TED Talk presenter, and I'll include his speech in my show notes, but he is a best-selling author. He wrote two fantastic books, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur and The Pumpkin Plan. Both, by the way, you can get on Audible. Use that as your free book. In fact, go to thankyouchris.com. It's going to take you to Audible. And because you're going to thankyouchris.com, you're going to get a free audio download. Use your free audio download and get either The Pumpkin Plan or The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. And if you've never heard of these titles, you're going to want to hear my next guest. You're going to want to hear this next episode, because not only is he releasing a third book, Profit First, which we get into, we talk about it, but we had such a blast in this conversation. I mean, we get into the nitty-gritty, we talk about business, we talk about Profit First, we talk about all those other things, but we had fun with it. We laughed. We had a great time. When you're driving to work right now, you're sitting in your car, you're doing the dishes, you're running, you're walking in a park, whatever you do while you're listening to this show, not only do I want you to learn a lot and get inspired and all these great things, but I want to make sure it's entertaining. I want to make sure my shows are not, I said this before, my shows aren't really that short for podcasting. They're about an hour long. It is my duty as a host, a broadcaster, someone that is producing content and giving it to you, it is my duty to make sure that you're entertained the entire time. And I can tell you right now, I think I accomplished it with my next guest. Now remember, CeroneShow.com/17 for the show notes. ThankYouChris.com to pick up your free audiobook from Audible. And let's get into it. What does it mean to be your best self? As entrepreneurs, we sometimes try to be the world's best, but have you thought about just being yourself? Do you think about being creative? What about focusing at what you're good at and getting help with the things that you're not? What about profits? Are you in a panic, fight or flight mode, struggling to grow your business? Well, it doesn't matter if you're just starting out or a seasoned business person, because my next guest is not only going to shed some light on a lot of these questions I just asked, but I'm willing to bet you're going to be entertained in the process. Launching his first company at the age of 24, his fast growth caught the attention of the U.S. Small Business Administration, ultimately being recognized as Young Entrepreneur of the Year. As an expert in his field, he has been a guest on CNBC, ABC, MSNBC, probably more times than I can count, on topics like business, entrepreneurship, sales, even marketing. He is a best-selling author, public speaker, but more importantly, a father, husband, and just all-around great guy. Mike Michalowicz, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm glad we can make it work this time because this is actually take two for you and I.
No, it totally is. It was not meant to be. Like, that day when we were recording this first, my kids were home because of this freakish weather we're having, snowstorm after snowstorm, and we were firing this interview up, and the kids were firing video games on upstairs, and this killed the bandwidth at my house.
It did. It killed it like crazy. And we were kind of chatting before, and I was telling you, like, I was kind of nervous. Like, how do you – for me as a host, right, how do you go about trying to get an interview and someone that you want on the show, and then when it finally happens and we're like – we were grooving. We were talking. Like, I'm thinking to myself, do I – cut this off? Like, how do you do something like that? So I'm glad I did, though, because we sound way better this time around.
Way better. And the cutoffs, there were some awkward moments, I suspect. Like, I'm like, hey, do you want to suck?
Yeah.
You know, these horrible things were being said because everything was being cut out. So we're doing justice now. We're doing justice to this now.
Absolutely. So we're going to get into, you know, some of your background. We're going to get into the awesome things that you've done and especially your new book that's coming out. But there's somebody I want to talk about because this has to do a lot with your intro. And I just made that connection as I was kind of writing this out is Jackie.
Jackie. Yeah.
Jackie is amazing. And I told you this last time. I think I wrote her an email on how amazing she is. Jackie works for you, right?
Yep. Yep.
She helps you with everything. And I'm just guessing here from scheduling to whatever. I mean, what does she actually do?
Yeah. So she came on board about 4 months ago. I decided I need an in-house assistant, mm-hmm. Someone that I work with, you know, face to face, and she does everything from scheduling what we're doing here to some of the sales stuff, to soliciting new business, to negotiating stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. She, you know, she is the front face of the business now, and the feedback I get constantly is how great the business is. It's really how great Jackie is, but I think it's important for all of us when we hire people, we got to recognize that they're another face for the company. And when you're a small business, from you know, being an author and stuff, it's just two of us. I have other businesses on the side where there's other employees, but when you're small, like, and you bring on one more person, you're doubling your workforce. This is 50% of your outward facing stuff is now this person. You got to really hire someone that's amazing.
Absolutely. And I'm sure it's not all too common to be interviewed and it's say, hey, let's talk about your assistant actually instead of you. But really, yeah. I think it goes with the overall package of not only what you're about and what you preach and teach and all that, but it goes along with being creative, being your best self, because you said it best. You know, she is the gatekeeper. Right. And if people that you're doing business with or interviews or whatever, right, if that's the impression they get up front, not only just with you, like you said, whether you're a small business or whatever, that sets the tone and the type of relationship that you're going to have going forward. And for me personally, as someone who's been dealing with her back and forth on email, I got the warm and fuzzy feeling. You know what I mean? Like, this guy's not only great, he's a professional and he's serious. And if I were to ever do, you know, some type of business that worked with him in the future, I would be confident that, you know, it would all work out, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I went food shopping this weekend and I was going to the local A&P. That's one of the stores that's right nearby here. And I was telling my friend, I'm going to A&P. I pick up some stuff. Like, oh, I don't go there. I'm like, oh, really? Why don't you go there? He's like, he goes, the cashier there sucks. He squishes the bread and stuff. Like when he packs your bag while he's doing it, he squishes your stuff. I'll never go there. And it's kind of the same thing. It's you know, there's the outward facing person for that business is this cashier guy. Mm-hmm. And there's people not going to that store because the cashier, they may have the best prices, the best quality produce, the best, all this other stuff. But that component of a bad cashier is preventing people from going. And that's how important, you know, these aspects of our business are. I call them ports of entry. You have every way that people can interface with your business, be it an employee, be it your website, be it your voicemail system. If any of those areas aren't really well presented, if they aren't well polished, people will have that impression of your entire business. I see crappy websites that just are killing businesses and people don't get it. And I've heard voicemail systems where it's just miserable and they don't get that it's killing their business because it's not persistent with their brand. It doesn't represent who's on the inside. The outside's got to look like the inside and vice versa.
Absolutely. And two things I want to say to that. One, don't look at my website after that comment because I that is a focus of mine. Right now I'm like that Chinese food place in the ghetto that you risk getting accosted by gang members to go to because they get the best chow mein in town. But one day I'll get a nice building. I'll get a nice sign. I promise. But two is your website in particular. A mutual person that we know that you're going to be on his show. That's how that conversation started. He reached out, I think it was on Facebook or something, and he was talking about whose website did we like, because he was looking for inspiration, right? He was looking He's always looking to be creative. Michael O'Neill, I'll just go ahead and mention him. And right away, I was like, you got to go on MikeMichalowicz.com. Because not only is it clean and is it crisp and it's not busy, but it's fun. It's interactive. Like, it's not the normal website you see on people, who are in business or authors or whatever. I just love your website.
Yeah. I have a saying, Chris, that better is not better, but different is better. And what I mean by that is I like to study behavioral psychology and to kind of how our minds operate. And what I found is that what attracts people, and we all know this, is something that's different. Our minds are very attuned to the unexpected. If there's a noise you hear at night while you're sleeping, we jump out of bed because it's something we didn't expect that's different. We pay attention to what's different. And this goes back to the caveman days. We were wired to see different because that meant it was either an opportunity, food or something, or a threat, something that was going to attack us. So when an unexpected thing happened, pay very close attention to it. So I said, well, if that's how our minds are wired, why do we all look at our competition at their websites and say, I'm going to make my website better by taking the best of all of my competitors' websites and making my website look like theirs, mm-hmm. but just better? It doesn't work. So different does. So what I did is I looked at my competitors' website and said, whatever they're doing, that's the rules of stuff I can't do. I then look, outside my industry and say, well, what are industries that aren't authors? What's the cleaning industry doing? What's the music industry doing? Just way outside my industry, and said, maybe I can learn something from them. And if it's different for authors, then I'll get noticed. And that's how that website in part came about, just being different.
I especially love the audio where you click to learn your last name. Like, it's not, I think one of them was like, my cow has tits or something. Like
that. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
If my name is, there's another strategy there, is that our weaknesses turn them into our biggest strengths. Mm-hmm. So everyone has weaknesses. And one of the weaknesses I have is the pronunciation of my last name. Michalowicz is not easy to pronounce. I know once you get it, maybe it's easier. But when you look at the spelling of it, it is hard. And so what most authors do is they go under a pen name, or they actually change their name to, Smith, Jones. But the advantage of having such an odd name is when people understand it and can pronounce it, they become the educators to other people. So once you know how to pronounce Michalowicz and someone says, what's this guy's name? How you pronounce it? Oh, it's Michalowicz. You can tell other people. So my job now is like, how do I educate people how to say my name? How do I make it fun and engaging? So on the website, on every single page next to my name is a little microphone button. You click on it and then it starts playing all different versions of how people can make fun of my name. But embedded there too is the proper pronunciation of it. So it's a way of educating people in a fun way, in a different way.
And you make it easy for them too. You don't write it out. The fact that you add the audio in there is not only fun and interactive, but for the end consumer of your content, you're making it as easy as possible for them to learn how to say your last name.
Right. And it's humanizing too. Like, my brand is very important, that I don't want to be seen. I hate the word guru. I hate the way the word thought leader, any of those things. I just think they're cheesy, and that indicates that person is superior. And I do not believe in that whatsoever. So I want everyone to know that I have experiences to share that may be different. So maybe you can learn from them, but I ain't better than anybody. And so I wanted to make sure that that comes across too. It's very humanizing. I'm just, you know, I'm just a regular guy. So make fun of me because that's cool. And it's so funny. So I'll go to events too, and people come up to me and say, "Hey, it's My Cow Has Tits," or "It's McAllen Tits," or "It's Michelob and Schmitz." Like they'll actually call me Mike Michelob and Schmitz. Here he comes. And I love it. I love it. It means it's getting across not only the pronunciation, but the that people realize, you know, we're all on the same level here.
Well, you actually gave a TED talk about this, right? About being the – I think it was like being the world's best versus your best self or something like that. It's kind of along those same lines, right?
Yeah. It's called The World's Best, and yes. Which is ironic. If you type in on Google the world's best TEDx speech, it comes up as the number one speech.
How awesome is that?
I know. That was not planned. It's just so funny. But what I did in that speech was I talked about the world's best – in my belief, is simply being genuinely, authentically yourself. And the people who embrace who they naturally and truly are, for all the bruises and blemishes that are included with that, and put that out there, are the world's best. Because the definition of the world is not the globe or the universe. The definition of the world is a perception. And what you see to be the world, Chris, and what I see to be the world is different because we are living different lives, and that's true for every person. So there's thousands and thousands of variations of worlds, and the best component is that authentic self. When we are true to ourselves, we naturally perform at our highest level. So just be authentic and speak to your world. And for some people, a world may be their family. So you can be – you literally, when you get that mug that says you're the world's best dad, mm-hmm. or the world's best mom, it's actually correct, because for your world, your family, you are the world's best mom or dad. You just need to act into it, your authentic self. So we all have an opportunity. That's the moral of the story. We all have an opportunity to be the world's best. It's just be authentic, truly 100% authentic, and speak to the world you're meant to speak to.
So let's kind of derail and talk about that for a second. How does somebody – they're listening to us talk right now, and they get the concept, right? But how would someone go about retraining their brain to think in that way and to kind of feel like it's okay that I am not the world's best, or I'm not the flashiest dude, or I'm not perceived as like the hot shot in the Mercedes or whatever, right? Whatever this particular person is kind of thinking right now. Like, how does someone go about trying to be the best that they can be themselves?
I think you need to discover who you are, because the flashiest dude, like to me, the flashiest dude, I kind of threw up in my own mouth a little bit. That's not appealing to me, but it's appealing to some people. And I'm not saying it's wrong at all. But we first need to decide for ourselves what really appeals to us. Meaning, if no one was paying attention, if no one would comment, no one would criticize, who would we be? What would we do? What really gets us excited? Because being the wealthiest or being the flashiest, all those things only achieve significance when other people look up at us, that we almost have a celebrity status for them. And I think to really discover our world's best is we need to peel that all away and just look at ourselves. What gives us the most enjoyment, regardless if people criticize us or not? I have one little exercise I've run, and I still do, for myself for years. And I would just wake up in the morning, and before I'd open my eyes, I would say, what's my life's purpose? Like, what am I really intended to do? Be it God-given or be it self-given? I don't care. I just keep on asking myself, what is my life's purpose? Why am I here? And by asking myself that for years, I started getting more and more clarity. And once I got clarity around that, I then said, okay, that's my purpose is telling me the world I must serve. And so for me, if this helps clarify that at all, is that I've determined that it's all about authenticity, that I need to express and teach others to be authentically yourself and use your business as a platform for expression. Now, additionally, I got to teach this to myself too. Like, I think whatever we need to give to others really is what we need to learn for ourselves. So as much as I need to teach other people how to use business as a platform for authentic expression, I really need to teach that to myself too. And then the last part is, in the world, the community that I'm trying to serve starts revealing itself. It's very polarizing. Some people are like, Mike, that's awesome. I get it and I love it. I'm on board. And other people are like, Mike, you're an idiot. You know, that's not how the world operates. But because I'm so into this purpose and I have such clarity around it, that criticism just kind of runs off like water off of a goose's back.
You pay no mind to it. You're like, whatever. That's your thing. That's fine. That's your opinion. Whatever. I'm doing my thing.
Exactly. And it doesn't even hurt. Like I get some critical feedback. Like, you know, Mike, you're an idiot. You're an asshole. You all this stuff. And I'm like, Like, it doesn't. That used to be very bruising. And now I'm like, you know, I'm just not meant to serve that person. And I don't feel that person's a bad person either. Like something's not connecting. They're on their own path too. That's cool. I appreciate their honesty. Yeah. At least they're being honest, you know? It doesn't hurt me nearly as much as it used to. I mean, there's still times I get comments. People like, you know, I don't know, this is totally tearing me down. And that's like, oh, that sucks. That sucks.
Yeah, but you're at the point now where you – and I think you figured this out just in experience in life. You realize you have the choice to either react or not react to that.
Oh, we totally do. We totally do.
Absolutely. And real quick story, because I think you had a similar one in your background. Some time ago, in the early 2000s up to I don't know when, I was very fortunate at what I was doing at the time to make an obscene amount of money. And I thought I was king, you know what?
Yeah.
And I was – you would have thought it was like an early 90s rap video, the way I was spending money and really just acting like a – I'll say it, a douche, right? I will. I don't
care. That's the exact word I get.
Yeah.
Keep going. Keep going.
I was acting like a douche. And here's why I'm bringing this up, because I love this story that I don't even remember where I saw it or read it or heard it that has to do with you. But I had a similar experience in a car dealership where I was buying a new car almost a couple months, it felt like, because I could, and just acting like an all around douche. Now, shortly after that, about 2007, I think, I ended up, you know, almost going bankrupt, losing all of that, and just, you know, all this stuff. But the point why I bring this up is it was in that time that for me personally, I realized what it means to be your best self, what it means to be authentic, because the way I was trying to act and perceive and put out there in the world was not authentic. And obviously, look where it got me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And you have something similar like that as well, right?
I mean, the exact same story. I think we could write a book called The Douches.
Yeah.
Same thing. I sold my second company. Mm-hmm. I made a lot of money. Voice for me was a lot of money. I became a millionaire, and I came what I call a single day millionaire. I was a millionaire until I had to pay the taxes on it the next day, and I dropped below millionaire status again. So it wasn't like I was a millionaire, but at least for a day I had it. And what really changed was not the bank account; it was my mindset. I became this douche that I promised I never would be. I bought three cars. All these things to show off, moved into the most expensive town in New Jersey I could afford. Blah, 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 blah.
Flashy clothes.
Flashy car, yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff.
But really what the real douchey part was, Chris, if I ran into you in the street and we were talking, a part of me would feel that is better than you. A part of me would say, you know, I'm more successful. I know more about business. I'm better than you. And I started putting myself in my own head in a little platform slightly above other people. And that's the ultimate in douchiness. And then I lost it all. And as excruciatingly painful as that was,
it was probably the best thing that ever happened to you, though.
Yeah. Best thing that ever happened. It totally tore out my doucheness. I came to realize, oh my God, that, you know, none of us are different. We're just on, I think we're all going through a big pattern of life experiences, and some people are experiencing financial wealth, some people are experiencing health wealth, but we're all going to experience all elements of it. And we all got to realize we're all the same. Regardless of what's in your bank account, regardless of how physically healthy you are or not, regardless of the traumas and stuff you're experiencing in your life, like, we are all the same. We're just having different experiences.
Exactly. And that's why I mean, personally, I love telling my story. And I love that you're so public with yours, because I think people could really hear it and get inspired and realize that they, if they're on, you know, Douche Avenue about to turn in and pull into, you know what I mean, and buy a house on Douche Avenue, they don't need to. Like, they can pull out and really change.
Yeah. You know, so every female reader you have right now is like listeners dropping.
Oh, they already bounced. They're already like, after the second one, I think, they're like, I'm never coming back to this show again.
Yeah, I found the douche limit is about 1.5, maybe 2 douche comments. Like, you can say, hey, douche, and then you can go, oops, I didn't mean to say that. And you can keep your female listeners. But if you double douche, forget it. You're done.
Well, we're now getting into the stratosphere where iTunes and Stitcher Radio may put the explicit on my show. Who knows? But so we're talking about past experiences and the connection that we have and being authentic self, and going back to your an old book, which is still a goodie, is still powerful. The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur came out in 2008, if I'm not mistaken. More businesses, and just my opinion, I don't care if you're small or big or whatever, should really learn not only what it means to be a toilet paper entrepreneur in your book, but what it means to be your authentic self. Because I think when you combine the two, some type of magic happens at that point. Would you agree?
Yeah. When I wrote that book, the point I wanted to get across, ironically, was both of those things. And I was trying to think of an analogy. I was like, oh my God, the bathroom analogy is exactly it. There's two things that go on here. All of us have very humbling moments, authenticity, right? But so few of us are afraid to reveal it. So the cover of that book is the classic three-sheet circumstance. You know, you go in the bathroom, you look over, and it's like, oh my God, there's only 3 sheets left. Mm-hmm. The thing is, we've all been there. Like, this is kind of like, I don't care what country you're from or where you're from, we've all been in that position where it's like, there's not enough TP, but no one's like, my life is over, I'm going to give up, I'm just going to stay here for eternity. You move on. You find a way to navigate it. You become very resourceful. Like, your foot hooks the garbage can and pulls it in. You find stuff in there. And the thing is, in business, it's the same way. We all have very dark periods or struggles and stuff like that. Everyone's been through it. Few people are talking about it. So first of all, I believe, just put it out there, authenticity. The second part is the miracles that we can pull off when we don't have resources. We become so more innovative. They say, necessity is the mother of invention. Well, it's true. And I find the most innovative I've been in my own business, and my people I've worked with have been, is when they have few resources. They find ways to do miracle things with no money.
Like MacGyver.
You know, look at me, bubble gum and like a paperclip. The guy could,
he can level
explosives.
Yeah, he can level like a 50-story building with like a bubble gum, paperclip, a snorkel, and like a dirty sock or something.
Yeah, a snorkel. Yeah, and the funny thing, look at the government. They spend billions of dollars and they can't even hit the right building. I mean, so... MacGyver it, baby, MacGyver it.
Exactly. And I think that's really, to me, the epitome of the toilet paper entrepreneur, which is really the foundation, not only to, the next books that you put out, but what a lot of people should think. Everyone could relate to MacGyver, depending on how old you are. I should say that, actually. Depending on how old you are, if you remember MacGyver, the guy he'd blow up buildings, he'd break into safes, he would... do all these awesome things on the show, which made the show awesome, by the way. But he was extremely resourceful, and he worked with the things that he had, and he used his creativity and he made it happen. And I think a lot of business owners, big, small, solopreneurs, whoever you are, right? Some guy in his closet running a podcast, like, it doesn't matter who you are. If you could be just as resourceful without – spending, you know, in a godly amount of money or doing all the other things, and not only get the job done in the same way, but you really learn about yourself and business by doing it that way, right?
You really do. And, you know, money is kind of – it's like injecting a drug into you. You don't feel the pain. It buffers all the pain. So when you have no money, you make a mistake. Oh, my God, do you feel it instantly. When you have tons of money, you can do the exact same moves, but because you're numb now, you don't feel any pain. And so money makes us go down some really dumb paths.
Yes.
And the lack of money, while it feels so difficult and painful and raw in the moment, you're so much smarter for it. Mm-hmm. So much smarter for it.
Oh, yeah. And kind of going on that point, once you've been the quote-unquote MacGyver of your business,
yeah,
at the point where you do reach success, not only do you appreciate it more, but you value the dollar, you value what you have, and you can continue to propel yourself into, you know, more success because you're not making stupid mistakes or
– Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think I define success – newly now because I've learned that lesson. And success is really sustainability, self-sustainability. If I can grow my business to a point where it's running on its own comfortably, to me, that's the definition of success. Before that, I associated the size, number of employees I had, what mm-hmm. the top line looked like. And when I was pursuing size, I used money in really poor ways. Any money that would come in, I'd use it to spend more, and I'd justify in my head, well, the more I spend, the more I make. It takes money to make money. And now I've flip-flopped. Size doesn't matter so much. What matters is efficiency and health and streamlinedness. And money's always important, by the way. I'm not negating the significance of money, but the way it's used is tremendously different.
So I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I think this is a perfect segue into the Pumpkin Plan, which came out in 2012. And we're going to get to your newest one here in a second. But you talked about size, right, and growth and all that. And with the Pumpkin Plan, some of the thing behind it that you made the correlation to is you have these pumpkin farmers that has this huge, massive field and all these pumpkins. And then you have this subset of people who, instead of going for, you know, the biggest farm and making all this, like, they figured out how to make these massively big pumpkin.
Yeah, so ordinary farmers are in the old quantity game. Like, if you know, you have one big holiday and it's Halloween, you got to have tons of pumpkins ready to go that day. So the ordinary farmer is in the quantity game. Buy as many seeds as you can, as cheaply as you can, spread them all over and grow. Colossal farmers, on the other hand, that grow these pumpkins that are literally 100 times bigger than the ordinary pumpkin. Colossal pumpkin can grow now up to a ton. I mean, it's as much as a car, and the ordinary pumpkins are maybe 10 or 15 pounds. These colossal farmers actually use a much more simplified approach. They do a lot fewer things, a lot more focused, and as a result, the pumpkin responds organically and healthily and explosively. So they actually use way less resources and get way more growth. And it's like, ah, wow, if pumpkin farmers can do this naturally, I wonder if it applies to business. And it's something, once I discovered that process, I didn't write a book about it. I actually did it for my own businesses, and that's where my businesses really took off. Then I wrote a book about it. And sharing the process.
Pretty much you practice what you preach.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I test what I preach. Yeah. So even my newest book too, before I wrote it, I used myself as a guinea pig. And until I got it working for myself and other people, it's not worth, you know, writing. I didn't want this to be theory. I wanted to know this stuff worked. So the Pumpkin Plan worked for me.
So let's talk about your new book here for a second, because it kind of set the stage at this point, right? I brought up Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. I brought up the Pumpkin Plan. That's kind of like, you know, act one, act two. Now you're in Profit First, the new book. It's coming out July 4th, 2014, this year.
Yep.
I mean, you know a little bit about me by now. You know I like to do my research and do all that, but this is so new that there's not much. So
there's not much out there. Yeah.
Let me pose the question to you. Why don't you tell us why profit first, and why do people need to really pay attention to it?
So I think this is the elephant in the room, Chris. It was something that I would never admit to my own businesses, and I've come to realize very few people admit to it. And it's this. It's the bottom line health of their business. When I network and talk with other entrepreneurs, it's inevitably a conversation about the top line. How's business going? Good. How's revenue? Good. Sales are good or sales are bad? You know, how many employees do you have? Oh, I got, you know, bring on a few more. It's always discussion of the top line. I've never seen a situation where, you know, people are meeting, they say, oh, how's your bottom line? How's profitability? Like, you know, that conversation never happens.
Yeah.
So entrepreneurs, myself in particular, I prided myself on the size of my company, and I pound my chest. Hey, I just passed $1 million in revenue, just passed $5 million in revenue. Business is really growing. But behind the scenes, I was living check by check. And this is the God honest truth of most businesses. You pick any entrepreneur out of any room, I'm telling you, they're running check by check. I think 80 to 90% of small business is living check by check, but no one talks about it. So I said, I got to bring this to the forefront. And how do we fix this? Because it means constant financial stress. It means one bad month could put our business under. If it doesn't just rock the foundation, it'll put our business under. We got to address profit. And then I said, well, but what's the solution to this? Instead of just saying, how's your bottom line? Excuse me, and focusing on that, how do we fix it? And here's the fix I came up with. There's been a savings method that's been in existence in the U.S. for the longest time now, and it's been the most effective savings mechanism ever, and it's the 401k. And how 401k operates is if you get a salary of, say, $1,000 a week, just picking around random number, that $200 we'll say is taking out first, put into a 401k, then your taxes and all these other things are reserved, and you get maybe the net check of $600. But people adjust to live their lifestyle off of that weekly $600 check. But the savings, that $200 that was reserved in a 401k, piles up very quickly. And over the years, a huge volume of wealth accumulates. So I said, well, that's great. Employees do that, but why don't employers do that? And I'm not saying like an IRA or something. I'm saying in the business itself, what if every check that comes in, we take a percentage in profit first? What if $1,000 deposit comes in from a client of yours, what if you took $200 and put it into a profit account, and now you have to run your business off the remaining $800?
Like right off the bat, you get that $1,000 check. Why
instantly.
Don't you instantly pay yourself, put it in, not like a 401k, but just something, right? Something for your business. And then from what's remaining, then put it back into the business or pay your employees or whatever, right?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So today, even for myself, I had some deposits come in, a nice amount of deposits came in. $1,400 this morning went into my profit account. The remainder I have left, I use to operate my business. Now, people say, well, Mike, this is just a shell game. What comes in, but it's not. It's a behavioral change, because when I look at my bank balance, and this is the key, every entrepreneur looks at their bank balance. I call it bank balance accounting. Every day or every couple of days, we look and say, how much money is in the bank? Well, now we're going to see less in there. So we're going to go through the same response saying, oh, I only have so much amount of money. I can only spend this much. And our behavior just to live off of what is available in our operating account. But because the profit's been reserved and we have to remove the temptation, it can't be easily transferable. We put it with a different bank or something. Because the profit's out of sight, out of mind, it just starts piling up for our business. That's the process.
It's literally that simple.
I mean, it is
so freaking simple.
It's so freaking simple.
But is it? I was just gonna say it's simple. But is it easy?
Yeah. No, it's not easy.
Okay.
I actually have an accountability group because I cheated myself. When I started doing the system, I took aside 20% and the money was piling up. And then one day, I had a really quiet month. I mean, no deposits came in, and I said, I don't have enough money to pay my bills. So, hey, there's money in my profit account. Let me just borrow from myself, stealing. And sure enough, I defeated the system in that one move. What happens is when you can't pay your bills, that's a red flag saying you shouldn't be having those bills. You need to cut the costs. You need to never incur those costs again. And it becomes a very painful moment. But when you then address it and remove those bills, your profitability can sustain, can continue. I found to really hold myself accountable, I need to start an accountability group. So I started a group. There's two other people. We actually had our call this morning, and we sit there and we discuss our numbers, and we hold each other to always taking our profit first and then adjusting our business accordingly to run more and more and more efficiently.
And the people in this group, these are, I'm assuming, like big time business owners or people well respected within their own industries, right?
No, I mean, you wouldn't know their names. Peter and Lori, I'm just doing it with two other people. You probably wouldn't even recognize their businesses. One's a $6 million company. Another one is, she had a $2 million company. She's restarting. So it's a brand new startup. This method applies to businesses of any size. I have a public company doing this.
Well, that's why I bring it up, because I mean, for the smaller business, right, the pizza shop owner or whatever, I want them to hear that, you know, it's not just, you know, it applies to you. These people who, you know, other people aspire to be, probably you and people in your group, like, you guys are doing this as well. You're getting into a group or a call or whatever, and you're keeping each other accountable. Just because you've reached a mark and a level in your business doesn't mean that you can just kind of, you know, clap your hands together and say,
oh, no.
You know what I mean? Like, you still continue to do it.
Yeah. Well, businesses of all sizes need to do it. So now, in my group specifically, I keep my group small because there's a lot of discussion and
keep it intimate.
Get intimate. But it's been popular enough that it sparked other groups. So there's a couple of friends that have just started their own private first groups, basically. And in one group, it's funny that one guy has a $15 million company, and his accountability partner has a $200,000 barbershop. And
that's
the
awesome.
Two of them hold each other accountable. So it's irrelevant to your size. And by the way, one's not better than the other. If anything, the barbershop's more profitable. He's running it more efficiently. He's the greater success in health of his business. So we got to get our mind off that top line number. My mind was stuck there forever. Mm-hmm. I've changed it, and we all need to. It's all about healthiness. How healthy is your business, not how big it is.
And I love that you brought up that the barbershop owner, because we talked about that probably 20 minutes ago in this interview. Just because you have the big time business and you're bringing in $50 million in revenue doesn't mean the back end matches the front.
You know? No. I know guys that, you know, have these big businesses, and you visit their house and they have lawn furniture for their furniture because they can't afford anything. I mean, those are really unhealthy companies. Conversely, you know, I have some friends that run very small revenue businesses, but oh my God, they're so efficient. They're so efficient. They're getting all done with just one person or one and a half people. And they're kicking back and enjoying, you know, the beach weather while the $50 million guy is trying to figure out how he's going to pay his mortgage next week.
Isn't that inspiring when you see stuff like that?
Oh, I love it. I love it.
It's not only inspiring, but kind of way going back to what we talked about. You said look to people outside of your industry for inspiration or whatever. Now, that doesn't just have to apply to websites or how you do something. That could be applied to how they run their money on the back end and how lean they are.
Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, who I aspire to be today is the guy who can do what he wants when he wants. He's that freedom of time, meaning the control over time, and has the confidence that the business, whatever generates income for him or her, keeps operating on automatic in his absence. Like, to me, that's the ultimate in freedom. They call it financial freedom, where you have enough money to do what you want when you want. To me, it's really not. It's the freedom of control.
Yes.
The freedom of time. That's an impressive business that yields that to its owner.
No, absolutely. I mean, just myself, I definitely have the freedom of time, and I definitely know what that means, because now I have the choice to wake up at the crack of dawn to talk to you, and for me at least, because I'm on the West Coast, but
right.
I have the chance to take my son to school and you know, eat dinner with my family together and just all those things, right? Like, we're not on the beach side with a laptop making all this money. No, I don't care about that. I care about my time.
Yeah, you know, one of the fascinating stories I heard was about Sam Walton, you know, the founder of Walmart.
Uh-huh.
He had financial freedom, what so many people aspire to have, right? He made billions in his lifetime, self-made billionaire. And his dying words reportedly was, "I blew it." When he passed away, he was surrounded by his family. And he said he blew it because he didn't know his family. He was never there for them. He had a son, actually, he never even spent time with or met. His wife was there more for convenience, not as a wife. And as he died, he realized what a wasted life he had. Yet we all aspire to be the next Walmart, it seems like. And I did too, but I am more, and I want to change that mentality. I want to aspire to have freedom of time to love what I do. When I'm working, I don't want to ever feel like I'm working. I just want to do it because I get joy out of it, and I deliver and benefit to, you know, my fellow humans. But I want the flexibility to say, you know what, next couple of weeks I'm going to take off and just head to the mountains with my kids.
Yeah, yeah. And I bet you, kind of going back to the old neighborhood you and I used to live in over on, you know, Douchebag Avenue, I bet you every single one of those homeowners are going to end up saying to themselves almost the same thing. Like, I blew it. I did it wrong.
Yeah. And that's what I felt was coming my way. That's why I'm so happy I lost it, and as painful as it was. And I'd never choose to go through that experience ever again. I'm sure you wouldn't either.
Oh, no way. I'm glad I did. I'm so grateful I did, and I learned a lot and all this other stuff, but I would never want to do that again.
No, it's like taking something out of an oven and then putting it under cold water. I mean, it just cracks you and it hurts. But man, I came so much to appreciate how bad my life would have been if I continued down that path without me ever realizing it. I would have had that Walmart moment.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you're not going to, right?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to. I hope not. I don't ever want to go back that way.
So we're coming up on our time. We only have a couple minutes left. Profit first. Now, the tagline, or I don't know what you would call it, it's a simple system to transform your business from a cash-eating monster to a money-making machine. Now, in this book, you obviously go into the details and the why behind the why, but is there actionable items and things in here that people can really take and apply that in their own business?
Oh, yeah. I know it's highly actionable. So the opening sentence says, "I think I'm Dr. Frankenstein." And the reason the book opens that way is because I think many people think they're Dr. Frankenstein. We start a business that we're really inspired and excited about, and we have this great idea. The brain is this amazing idea, and we stitch together some resources and, you know, dig up some few dollars we have, and we stitch it all together, and we bring this thing to life, right? And it's like, it's alive! It's alive! We have that miracle moment. And the next day, you look at your creation, you're like, holy cow, it's a monster. And the only way now to sustain this thing and keep it from killing you is to throw more cash in its path. And our business, as it grows, just eats more and more and more money. And it starts eating away at our soul. And I think that's where many of us are or get to. And then we think the only way to survive is either to sell my business, someone else buys this monster, or maybe I can hack it back apart and then reassemble as a small little monster again. And I'm saying it's none of those. I'm saying it's actually a living being. It just needs a couple changes, and this powerful beast can become productive for you. It can start carrying you. We don't have to be serving it. It can serve us. And then I walk through the steps of doing it. The first biggest step I told you was you got to take your profit first. Every time a deposit comes in, put it into a profit account. This is the foundational step that will start changing your own behavior and how you treat your business, how efficiently you run it, and it'll start the snowball effect of growing your business healthily.
It was actually perfect. I was going to – normally I say, can you give us any parting wisdom? But I think you said it right there. That was absolutely perfect. So I'll go ahead and leave that in there. And I'll include all the links needed to find you in the show notes on saronshow.com, Profit First, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, The Pumpkin Plan. Really get all three of these things. MikeMcCallowitz.com. I know that is just crazy hard to spell, so I'll make it extreme. Just as you make it easy for people to get the pronunciation of your last name, I'm going to make it easy for them to find you. So
Perfect.
Mike, I had a blast, man. I feel I'm glad we had a take two, really, because we had fun. I feel like I can do this for hours.
Yeah, no, time flies. I appreciate it, Noah and Chris, and I'm sorry the first go around didn't work out, but I'm happy we rescheduled. Hopefully there were some juicy tips in here for some of your listeners to employ immediately in their business.
Absolutely. Again, thank you so much. Mike Michalowicz, not My Cow Has Tits or Schlitz or whatever we talked about. I mean, talk about an amazing guest. I had a blast. I hope you did too, honestly, because we definitely had some fun, but we talked about a lot of things that sometimes a lot of people, myself included, I've been guilty of it. You heard us talking. I think a lot of stuff we kind of forget. We forget to do. So, SaronShow.com/17 for the show notes, for the TED Talk, for all the awesome stuff that we talked about. But more importantly, ThankYouChris.com to get your free audiobook from Audible. Get the Pumpkin Plan. Get the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. Get ready. Get engaged. Get whatever, because Profit First is coming out. So you want to make sure, you want to catch up on the past seasons, just as if this was a TV show. Watch season one, watch season two. So when season three comes out, you're ready and prepared. Now that's all I have. I am looking forward to the solo show that's coming out that I'm doing and many, 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 many more shows. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you later. See you. Still with me? A little behind the scenes info. I kind of moved my desk setup out of the closet a little too early. So I am literally sitting here in a fold out chair holding the microphone, and I got my laptop sitting in another chair. And that's how I recorded the entire intro and outro and me talking to you right now. That's all I got. See ya.